As protesters in Iran take to the streets in declining numbers, a VOA Persian TV producer tells us what kind of support they want to see from opposition leaders in exile.
The hope and demand from people inside Iran is for these people to get together and begin a collaboration and be able to do things outside that they cannot do inside.
Plus, a Washington-based researcher explains how Iran's protest organizers are responding to the current lull in protest activity. And later in the program, a German lawmaker tells us what she's learned from being a political sponsor of an Iranian hip-hop star jailed for lyrics lashing Iran's rulers.
He is not a regular prisoner. He is like somebody who is loved by so many that a lot of people are telling me that he is like the son of the nation.
From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Iran. Good morning. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. 4 months after Iranians began a new protest movement to end 4 decades of Islamist rule, there has been a perceptible decline in the number of street demonstrations in major Iranian cities in recent weeks. One notable exception has been the southeastern city of Zahedan, capital of Iran's Sistan and Balochistan province, the impoverished home of the nation's ethnic Baloch and predominantly Sunni Muslim minority. Zahedan has seen weekly protests ahead of Friday prayers, including last Friday. A video posted online by VOA sister network Radio Farda showed marchers chanting for the death of Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. The marchers were heading to a mosque for Friday prayers, led by outspoken government critic Molavi Abdulhamid. For more on how Abdulhamid was able to deliver another sermon rebuking Khamenei, I spoke on the phone with VOA Persian TV producer Saman Arbabi.
Well, he's protecting his people, and he knows he's there to represent that group of minority Baluchis. He hears them, he listens to them, and he knows it's his duty to speak on their behalf. So although he was, you know, appointed by the supreme leader, he's much more in touch with his people in Balochistan than Ayatollah Khamenei is with the rest of the country. So he's basically living up to his obligations and doing what he's been expected to do. And, you know, he's not harsh. He's not trying to overthrow the regime. So he's uses very delicate language, but it is critical. Basically, he's criticizing the leadership for not listening to the people. And that's something that he's doing for his people. And that's basically, he's doing his job.
Right. On another topic, you were telling me earlier that some anti-government activists in Iran want to see stronger support from prominent Iranian opposition figures in exile. So how effectively are the people on the outside providing that support, you know, from the perspective of those inside Iran?
So there are different groups, obviously, which makes it nice and unique and democratic because, you know, there are different people representing different parts of Iran. You have the women's rights movement, you have the students, you have like the LGBT community, you have the former monarchists, you have the leftists, all that. So they all have respected opposition leaders abroad in different countries. And the hope and demand from people inside Iran is for these people to get together and start, begin a collaboration of representing the voices inside Iran and kind of take the leadership and be able to say things and demand and do things outside that they cannot do inside. And basically, it's two things. Give guidance to protesters inside Iran so they know what to do next time if they have to, you know, have a rally, and also be able to echo their voices to the Western governments that are beginning to understand what this regime's about in support of the Iranian population who wants democracy and freedom.
Can you tell us a little bit about who are the people on the outside in the diaspora who are involved in this activity?
Overall, there are different tiers to it, as you know, but like the top layer where there are like several people that represent different parts of this Iranian population. One of them is the former son of Shah, Reza Pahlavi, who does not want to be a king, does not represent monarchy. He's made it very clear, but he does influence, and he still symbolizes the old nationalism of what Iran used to be before the revolution. So he's one of the giants. You have Mahsi Alinejad, who's been the most successful and most aggressive women's rights activist we've had, and human rights. So she represents a broad variety of people, from the LGBT community to women to other activists and things like that.
And of course, she's also a host for a VOA Persian TV program that you work on as a producer.
That's correct. Yeah. And we're recording the show today. So she's another one. The other one would be Hamed Ismailyoon, who's in Canada. Unfortunately, he was thrown in this not by choice, but because 3 years ago, his wife and 6-year-old daughter were on that Ukrainian plane that was shot down by RGC and immediately killed. So he's become a pretty vocal activist against the regime. He's a great organizer. So these are three. And then there are some other ones, but I would say these are the main three that you hear their names brought up quite often. And then under that, you have obviously other people that fill in other positions just as important, like Nobel Peace Prize winner Shirin Ebadi, who's a lawyer and a human rights activist. And then you have Kurdish representatives and other minority groups that have their people who basically fill this whole table. So the seat's open to a lot of people, but this is sort of the beginning of the structure.
All right. Well, let's keep an eye on how that structure develops. Saman Arbabi, VOA Persian TV producer, speaking to us from New York City. Thank you very much for coming back to Flashpoint Iran.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Washington-based public policy research group American Enterprise Institute has been monitoring the general decline in Iran's protest activity through its Critical Threats Project team. The team's lead Iran researcher, Keita Fitzpatrick, joined me by phone on Monday to explain why she believes the protest movement has likely culminated after 4 months.
So the reason why we think that it's reached a certain point of culmination is the activity that we've been observing throughout the past several weeks. We've noticed a significant decrease in protest activity throughout Iran, starting from around December 8th. And again, we had one significant uptick throughout that period, but we noticed that the latest call to protests from youth groups, they have these three-day calls that they've been adhering to, really failed to generate turnout like we've previously seen. So that's one of the reasons why we assessed that. Although there are so many things going on in Iran right now, there are so many grievances that have not been addressed by the regime, that at any point, if there is a flashpoint, another issue that comes up, protest activity or other acts of anti-regime defiance can pop up again.
I think not a lot is known about the groups who have been trying to get people onto the streets, the organizers of these protests. What can you tell our listeners about these organizations? Who are they and where are they?
It's a great question. This is one of our favorite things to study. It's been so fascinating to see this movement evolve in this regard. So one of the groups that we've been watching, or one of the networks of groups that we've been watching really closely, is the neighborhood youth groups of Iran. So these are localized groups within different neighborhoods in Iran. And these groups are telling us that they are young populations within city centers. So we have one in Tehran, we have one in Tabriz, we have one in just a lot of different city centers. And they have been seemingly driving a lot of the protest activity throughout the past several weeks. They have been coordinating and, you know, trying to get feedback from their followers. They conduct polls. They even have released a unified charter with other neighborhood groups, which has been really, really fascinating. So seeing that evolve, and again, seeing that they seemingly failed to produce turnout over the past few weeks has been really interesting to see.
How have your team been trying to communicate with the individuals in these groups? And also, how does your team try to verify the information that you get from those people?
We do not communicate with these groups at all. We are just very, very attentive followers, and we pick up on everything that they say and assess it every single day. We do have working characterizations and assessments of where these groups are aligned. We've actually been able to figure out where some groups are. So although a lot of them have signed certain charters, there are fissures within these groups. We've been able to see notable rhetorical differences between, for example, some groups seem to be more oriented on the West and communicating with an international audience. Other groups appear to be much more focused on domestically turning out protests. So there have been a few divergences, and it's a interesting practice of constantly having to readjust, re-examine based on the social media activity we've seen throughout the day.
Well, speaking of social media activity, have you seen any indications that these protest organizers acknowledge that their efforts have reached a culmination, that they've peaked?
We've certainly seen in the past, it takes a few days. We've seen previously protest organizers, after a period of not failed, but maybe activity that didn't generate the turnout that they were hoping for, we've seen them kind of re-examine it retroactively and say, okay, we didn't really see a lot of activity. What can we be doing differently? Some groups solicit feedback from their users, and we find that those groups historically have a better chance of generating protest activity in their area, which is interesting. We've also seen certain groups say, okay, maybe protest activity in the way that we've seen throughout the past several months isn't sustainable. What other things can we instruct our users to do? What other acts of anti-regime defiance can we tell them to do? And that's something, a conversation that we've been seeing them have with each other and with their users is, you know, what comes next? How can we be doing better? Why did we fail, et cetera? So it's really an iterative process that we're seeing them work through in real time.
What have you learned about the ways in which these protest groups want to try to keep their movement going? What other methods do you think they're going to use?
That's a really fascinating question. So we've seen some groups, the groups that seem to be more oriented on an international audience, are still really focused on generating really big turnout, because I think that's the thing that really grabs the international attention. And other groups, we've seen them focus much more on those small acts of consistent and sustainable acts of anti-regime defiance. So some groups are calling for economic strikes. They're calling for just chanting anti-regime slogans from their house every night. They're calling for kind of vandalizing certain spaces and writing Massamini protest movement slogans. These groups are really interested in just keeping the movement alive, even if it doesn't through traditional protest activity.
So what are the key indicators that you're going to be following in the coming days and weeks as you monitor these daily developments from Iran?
So we're looking for certain flashpoints, and this is something that I think we'll look for a long time, just as Iran as a portfolio kind of tends to be this way. The issues that initially sparked anti-regime protests still persist and actually might be getting worse. So the sociopolitical issues that galvanized the Mahsamini protest movement, women's rights, the regime has made no concessions at all when it comes to this. They've made rhetorical indications suggesting that they might do something, but they really haven't done anything. That mandatory hijab enforcement is still there. We've been seeing worsening economic conditions. The rial, the exchange rates are the worst that they've ever been. We've been seeing deteriorating environmental conditions. We've been seeing just a host of other issues that could be other flashpoints for protests. So we're going to be continuously monitoring those, because, right, these are just further grievances that the Iranian people already have with the Islamic Republic and could ignite further unrest.
Keita Fitzpatrick, Iran team lead and analyst at the American Enterprise Institute's Critical Threats Project, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. Thanks for coming on to Flashpoint Iran.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Iran. I'm Michael Lippin. It has been more than 80 days since a popular Iranian rap artist was jailed and charged with a crime carrying the death penalty after he denounced Iran's Islamist rulers through his music and participated in street protests. Days before Tumaj Salehi's arrest on October 30th, he released a music video on Instagram titled Fal in Persian, meaning fortune-telling, with the line, 44 years of your government, it's the year of failure. One of the most outspoken advocates for Salehi since his detention has been German Member of Parliament Yvonne Rhee. I spoke to her on the phone last Friday and asked how she decided to become his political sponsor.
Political sponsorships have a very long tradition in Germany. So when I started as a member of Bundestag in 2021, everybody was talking to me about what members of parliament could do for political prisoners all over the world. So that's what I remembered, that there were ways to have a little bit more responsibility for a prisoner if you have a political mandate. So I was looking around and I was asking some activists and some organizations if they were matching political prisoners in Iran with members of parliament. So that was my wish. And then some activists were asking me if I would be the sponsor of Prumage, and I had no idea who he was. So it was not that I chose him. It was just that the activists were looking for somebody and just remembered that I was asking around. But now that I know what he is doing or what he has been doing, it's a very great honor to be his political sponsor. And I know that there's a lot of responsibility to be his sponsor, maybe even more than other sponsors.
What do you mean when you say it's a lot of responsibility? How does that feel to you?
Well, there are so many mails and DMs and even letters and postcards coming to my office of people who are trying to explain to me what Timur Salehi means for the Iran revolution. They are telling me that he is somebody who taught others to be kind and to be caring for each other, and that he was somebody who gave people a voice when they thought they had no voice. So when I'm reading, like while reading those mails, I just realized that he is not a regular prisoner. He's like somebody who is loved by so many that a lot of people telling me that he is like the son of the nation. So he seems to be the family member of pretty much every person who has Iranian roots all over the world. So it's a huge responsibility, and it's an honor to be his political sponsor, and I will try to do good by him because he seems to be a very, very great, impressive person.
Are you, as far as you know, the only political sponsor that Tumaj has in the world, you know, outside of his country?
As far as I know that there is a member of parliament in Austria who is has the political sponsorship of Tumaj, and a member of parliament, I think, in New Zealand who is active for him. And I think that's very, very great because I can write to the embassy of the Islamic Republic of Iran here in Berlin. But if you're writing to Vienna and if you're writing to the embassy in New Zealand, I think it makes even more pressure because a lot of ambassadors have to like report back to Tehran and tell them that they are members of parliament who are vouching or who are trying to protect Timur Salehi. So I think that's really, really great what's happening all over the world for him.
Well, I was just going to ask you, you know, what your political sponsorship involves beyond reading and receiving and responding to those emails that you get from many concerned Iranians. You've also been trying to contact the Iranian ambassador to Germany, and I understand you've written multiple letters and only received one response so far. So why are you continuing to write to him?
We are not writing because we really expect him to reply in a very honest and open way. We just want him to know that we will keep keeping an eye out for all the political prisoners that we have a sponsorship for, and that he should never think that we like lessen our approach or that our attention is weakening. So that's the reason why we are writing him. And we don't really expect a response in writing, but we are looking out very carefully what is happening with the political prisoners in Iran. So that's the answer that we are looking for. Because we don't really believe that the letters that we are getting or the first letter that I received, that's something that we should like take very, very seriously. We are just looking for, are there any lighter sentences? Are there people or prisoners who get out of prison or whose death sentence has been lifted? That's the response we are looking for. And we don't want the embassy or the regime in Iran to think that we don't care anymore. That's the reason why we always keep writing.
Well, another aspect of your political sponsorship is using your platform, you know, as a member of the German parliament, the Bundestag, to draw attention to Tumaj's case. And in fact, you did just that today in the German parliament by talking to other members about Tumaj and just the situation with protests in Iran generally. What was the response like to your speech today?
It was really amazing because it was a whole debate about the situation in Iran and the revolution in Iran, and everybody, like almost all the members of parliament who were talking to this debate, had a political sponsorship. So there were not just Tumaj name mentioned, but a lot of other names mentioned from everybody who was talking, and the responses were very positive because whenever it's about political sponsorship, there are no like party groups or party, it doesn't really matter. So it was really beautiful to see how much everybody was caring for their own prisoners. And the response was very positive. We were applauding for everybody and clapping for everybody who was talking about what they tried to do to fight for their prisoners.
Do you have any idea how many other German parliament members are politically sponsoring Iranian prisoners? And what kind of coordination do you have with them?
There are over 300 members of parliament in Germany who have political sponsorships. It's the member of Bundestag, but also the member of the European Parliament. So it's not just the Bundestag who is involved in that. And we have, I think, as far as I know, there are like two bigger coordinations going on. There are three activists who are doing it. They have like, I think, matched and coordinated most of the sponsorships. And then we have the IGFM, that's the International Society for Human Rights in Germany. And they have a lot of experience already in matching and coordinating political sponsorships. And they are involved too. So they are doing all the research work. They are finding out who is in prison right now for political reasons, what the accusations are, what the status is, and to how to get in touch maybe with people who know more about their cases. So that's what they are doing. We are pretty much just like the members of parliament are just the ones who are in public for that. But the work in the background is going on with the IGFM and the activists who are doing it.
Well, speaking of the status of the prisoners, what have you learned about the latest condition of Tumaj? And do you know what his reaction is to the work that you and the other German lawmakers are doing on his behalf?
As far as I know, like the last I've heard from him is that that's what I always repeat, that the condition of his left eye is still worrying. Probably most of people know that he was tortured and that he has a lot of broken bones all over his body, but especially like the condition of his left eye is worrying because we don't really know how far his eyesight is affected. And from what I'm hearing is if he doesn't get treated very, very soon, it might be permanent. So that's the most worrying aspect of his health condition right now. Other than that, there are a few small positive steps, like that his father was allowed to visit him on a very irregular basis, and that his two appointed lawyers were chosen by himself. But it's not enough that I would say, well, we make process, because we don't really know how much, like how far they will go with that, or if they will turn back all those developments that we are considering to be a little bit positive. So the lawyers don't have access to all the case files. So it could be a little bit of a scam to just like, I don't know, to be allowed to have the lawyers, but they are not allowed to study the case files. So they are not prepared. So it doesn't make any change in how the court ruling will go. So we are pressing for that. But I'm relieved that he has at least some kind of contact with his father, because he has been in solitary confinement for 80 days. I mean, like every person would go insane just being by himself and being tortured and being injured as he is. So small steps. That's pretty much what we're getting out of from his situation right now.
Yvonne Rhee, German Member of Parliament, speaking to us from Berlin about your political sponsorship of Tumaj Salehi. Thank you so much for joining us on Flashpoint Iran.
Thank you so much.
That's all for this week's show. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Thanks for listening, and please join me again next week for another Flashpoint Iran.